I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that aloud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of how to not have trash politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation. We're giving you personal healing. We're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Scene, the podcast. The fact that all your faves are problematic doesn't mean they should stop being your faves. It just means that in a fucked up world, which no one will dispute this is, all cultural products are also going to be fucked up. Particularly the ones that resonate with so many of us that they become cultural phenomena. That's a quote from Dr. Lyra D. Montero in a piece called How to Love Problematic Pop Culture. And it's funny because I Googled something like, can we love problematic pop culture? And this was something that popped up. I think it was the first result. And she was talking a lot about the musical Hamilton. And a big part of the reason that this has been so on my mind is because I recently got super into Hamilton.
I didn't know
that. Have you watched it?
No, I haven't. I have not. I don't think I will. I mean, maybe. Anyways, sell me on it.
Yeah, it's fair. Well, I don't plan to sell anybody on any of the problematic things that I love. I'm definitely not going to be arguing that anyone should be okay with anything, or that any kind of like problematicness, it's not a word, should be overlooked. Because yes. there's plenty of things that we all have that we just like don't want to deal with. The feeling that we get when we even think about it or when we try to watch it is like, we're like, absolutely not, no thank you.
Yes.
And that is super fair. But I want to talk about the ethics of loving something and engaging with something when it doesn't fully align with our personal politics and values. Because I think we also all have things that we can see the criticisms, like we've heard it and maybe we share the criticisms, but we still really love it.
Yes.
Or really enjoy mm-hmm. it, or there's things about it that really resonate with us.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to talk about. And it's funny because Dr. Lyra D. Montero, she is actually known for a review essay in The Public Historian, which was titled Race Conscious Casting and the Erasure of the Black Past in Lin-Manuel Miranda's Hamilton. And she argued that despite its celebrated multiracial casting, the play reinforces the idea that the United States past was populated solely by white people, thus normalizing and legitimizing white power in the present. So that's her own critique. And yet she loves Hamilton. She's like a super fan.
Yeah, it's possible, right? Like I'm excited for this conversation because I don't know. The reality of it is that we're not all like pure, perfect people walking that pure perfection line. And yeah, I love that we're coming to the table with like problematic faves, because I've thought about problematic faves for a long time. My list has gotten shorter because some people are just off that list altogether. But there are still some things that I would say that I consume that I understand the critiques of. I didn't realize that Hamilton like garnered that kind of attention negatively. I didn't know that that was the reason, that it was like about kind of like a whitewashing of the state's history.
Well, there's a lot of
other things. Okay.
I mean, casting people of color, mainly black people, as the founding fathers. I mean, so there's the argument that I guess she's making in that piece about the way that it erases the fact that there were people of color and black people who were around at that time and who were part of the story. So we don't have to cast black people as white people to show their contribution, obviously, to the past.
Right.
And also casting people of color, and in particular black people, most of the cast is black, as the founding fathers. I mean, a lot of them were slave owners.
Right.
Slavery is mentioned and dealt with a little bit in the show, but you can make the argument that casting George Washington, he's played by Chris Jackson, who is this incredibly regal, amazing actor of color who has just this beautiful voice, and he really plays the role with so much sort of nobility. And then you have to like go back and be like, well, but
what was
who
he
was
like?
George Washington, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it can be, you can gotcha. Kind of forget, you know? And it's interesting because this was such a cultural phenomenon, especially in the United States. But it was like everybody from people like this scholar who has incredible analysis to like Dick Cheney was a huge fan of the show as well. Right? So.
Right. Wow. Okay. Mass appeal, questionable.
Exactly. And I think that's like an argument she had in there, right? That like, if something's going to resonate with so many of us in this world, there's probably some shit that's wrong with it. So I kind of wanted to start, though, with maybe putting forth ideas that we have about when do we have a responsibility to not engage with something? Like, when is it past what do I personally like or not? When should we just, like,
say no
altogether, yeah, and boycott? To me, the biggest one is we have to think about money. So if somebody is a real-life violent offender and we're giving them money in some way, then it gives them power to continue doing what they're doing.
Right, yeah.
So that's a big one for me. Do you have, like, personal rules where, like, there's certain lines you feel like you can't go past?
I think it has to do with, like, the kind of harm, maybe. There's a bit of that. Hmm. And then there's also just, like, has this person been given ample amounts of chances or opportunities to learn? And, like, what have they done with that? If I get the impression, and especially when it's like a long-standing sort of like artist, let's say, that I have like enjoyed their music for a long time and I've seen sort of the progression of their life or their professional life or their musical career, for example, and there have just been like a whole series of things that they've said or done where it's like, wow, it just seems like you as a person are not a good person. I think that that's what it is for me. It's like, do I get the impression with the evidence that I have witnessed or heard of myself that this person is a good person or that this person is not a harmful person? Because I don't expect every single artist to be like noble and good necessarily, mm-hmm, but I do have the expectation for myself that like I'm not supporting a person who has been like known to be harmful, be like abusive or say harmful things without any care, without any like, you know, coming back and being like, hey, I apologize. I obviously didn't know that. You know what I mean? So yeah, the person that I have in mind, I don't know if we're talking about specifics right now.
We can be.
Okay, the person that I have in mind is Azealia Banks. So she was somebody who I used to love her music, and I still think she's an incredibly talented artist. Her creative brain is really intriguing to me, but she's just said so many things, like so many ways that she just like engages with her own personal beliefs and like communicates about things that she doesn't like. And like, she just gets really like vile and hateful. And she said some Islamophobic shit. She said some really homophobic shit. I'm sure she said transphobic shit. She is a dark-skinned black woman, but talks about bleaching her skin. So there's like so many things that she has said or done where I'm like, I don't necessarily believe that she is a bad person, but I think that she's caused so much harm that I don't believe that she is like a good person that much. She makes great music, but for me, I look at the entirety of the person, and if I feel like that person is just like, I don't know, I don't like saying bad or good, and like I don't like thinking of it as a soul binary, but it's like, are you putting out great art and some, you know, some of the things you've said, not so great? Or are you putting out great art and then the things that you say when you're not putting out great art are just like egregious? If it's the latter, I'm probably less inclined, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I mean, hearing the egregious thing somebody's saying can definitely just ruin them for you, you know, like giving you that feeling of not wanting to engage. But also you mentioned not wanting to support someone like that. And so do you mean with money? Like for you, is there a difference between like buying a ticket to go see a movie versus like illegally downloading it? Do you feel like you're sometimes okay to still engage if you're not giving them money, or is it not really about that for you?
Well, I think it's more just like the views, like, so social media, like I will unfollow somebody. I will not listen to their music. It's about consuming their, so I don't think about like the dollar amount.
It's not a financial boycott.
No, not necessarily. Like, yeah. So like, let's say there was a show that I was watching and in the background they had Azalea Banks. I wouldn't be like, well, I'm not watching this show. Like, it's like, okay, that person is there. I know it's a great song. I like the song too. But I don't think I would go out of my way to like listen to her albums because I know that like she gets money off of streams. But I also wouldn't like follow her on Instagram. So it's like kind of a wholesale, like I just would rather not engage with that person content wise or support them because I kind of feel like, I don't know. I think for myself, I'm like, well, what does that say about me and my tolerance for the energy that that person is putting out? Like, I'm accepting that because if I'm following them on Instagram or Twitter or I'm reposting them, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I kind of feel like the least that I could do, especially if that person is in harmful shit, is to be like, you know what? I'm not going to support this person because I just don't think we don't share values. But that being said, it's like, you could also not share my values and I wouldn't know if you just didn't talk about the things you talk about. You know what I mean? Like Azalea Banks could have just not said a bunch of shit that she said and I would have never known any of the egregious harms that she's done or even the things that she's also endured. Like I don't want to make it seem like she's just like a bad person that's just like floating around being a bad person. It's like she's also been like subject to a lot of harm.
Oh yeah.
I hold both of those things at the same time. But for me personally, I'm kind of just like, I don't want to consume any of it.
Yeah. So for me, I don't know. For me, there's the private feelings that I have about people, you know, there's the sort of things that just make me dislike them and not enjoy seeing them. There's, yeah, the public support of, you know, following. And yeah, financial is a big thing for me. With streaming, I think it's interesting. So like I listen to the song Fuck You by CeeLo Green probably like once every 3 years or something.
Okay, yeah.
CeeLo Green is a rapist.
Oh, really? Oh my God.
Oh yeah. You don't know about this?
No.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, wow.
Be the one to have to tell you. Yeah. So I used to listen to the song a lot more, but then because of hearing about that and the way that he responded to it just made it very abundantly clear the person that that is. But with streams, I'm like, you make like a third of a cent off of one stream.
Right.
I feel like I will allow myself to listen to that song, right, like once every 3 years. It really makes no difference to his numbers or his,
right,
his money. But then the allegations against T.I. that have happened more recently, I was listening to like a throwback playlist and one of his songs came on, the one with Rihanna.
Oh, just live your life. Hey, okay, go ahead.
Great song. Yes. It's a classic.
Yes.
But I was like, okay, wait, the allegations against him just came out and I don't want to be part of some kind of story that's like, oh, the allegations just happened and T.I.'s streaming numbers are up. So obviously people, right, don't believe it or don't care, right, you know? So I feel like that is a part of it for me too. It's like having to think about the fact that it's not just art. It's not just entertainment when we engage, you know, with the industry.
Yeah. And I think this like similar, I felt that way about listening to Michael Jackson's music.
Mm.
Cause I think, yeah, there's a part of me that's like, yo, this man still gets in his death, like still gets radio play. And I don't know, like I haven't done very much thorough investigation about the allegations about Michael Jackson and the molestation that he has been alleged to have done. But I certainly believe that it was highly possible that he did those things. So I'm kind of like, okay, like, yeah, it makes you have to think critically, I guess, right? About like how, where's my line? Like, what does it mean? Do I listen to it in private? Like, is it about that I wouldn't like, you know, have this music playing in the background of something that I post online? Is it about like, no longer keeping this person sort of like in my like top three artists that I love? You know what I mean? Like, where do the real things that people do or say, where does that come into play when we're like consuming? And it's not like, I don't know, I don't have a hard and fast rule about it. I think I just try to be like, do I feel like this person is like a good, it's really about a good or bad person, and it's about vibes too, and it's also about like the information that I have available to me that I have done research on. So I might end up finding out, like, for example, this is not an artist, but you remember when Tommy Hilfiger was like this, yeah. It was a huge thing like in the late 90s. Yeah. About how Tommy Hilfiger was like a just diabolical racist, which was like chainmail gone wrong. And people said like, oh yeah, did you see him on Oprah Winfrey, like the Oprah show or whatever? And he said this, that, and the other thing. And like that show never happened. And then like, and so it's like, I remember the boycotts that happened. Like I remember my mom being like, because I had some Tommy Hilfiger shit that we had bought secondhand. And mom was like, we're not wearing that. You're not allowed to wear that. I'm like, Tommy Hilfiger doesn't want you to wear that. And then, like, so, you know, at the time I didn't have any information. Then you find out later on, like that never even happened. Like that was like chainmail that somebody had created or whatever. And like, by all means, maybe Tommy Hilfiger is not like a raging white nationalist supremacist. And we will never know sort of like how he really feels about black people wearing his clothes, right? But I think so much of it has to do with like what you feel comfortable as an individual consuming, wearing, like adorning yourself with, affiliating, because it's an affiliation thing, right? Like it kind of, that's how I see it, especially when it comes to like media. It's like, will I affiliate? Am I fucking with this person knowing some of the things that people have said about them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then it's interesting. I mean, so the BIPOC of the week is Dr. Montero, but it's also my sister because she and my brother-in-law and I have had, you know, a lot of debates about various pop culture things and the politics of each of them and if we can be okay with this thing given these problematic elements. And, you know, Sheila has similar standards that I do in terms of like financial support and things like that. But she always says, she's like, I don't expect entertainment to match my politics. And I don't think that we should. Like, I don't think that makes sense. And I really appreciate that because I feel like in our sort of social justice circles, we sometimes have these really high standards of wanting everything to be on the cutting edge of the radical politics that we're growing into, which there's great things about that. You know, I think the people in these circles who are on those cutting edges, I think are people who are doing a lot of amazing work in the world to change things and all of that. But I think we sometimes take it a little too far. And I think it just makes me wonder, why should we expect entertainment to hit that level of like radical politics that activists hit, that people who spend their whole life dedicated to
the cause.
Politics, yeah. Hits, you know?
Yeah. One thing comes to mind is that sort of, I don't know who said this quote, but that artists should be creating art that represents the times. I don't know who said that, but it's something like that, you know, like that there's this responsibility of artists to look around them at what's happening in the world and make things that are maybe contextual, responsive, reactive, whatever. But I don't think everybody's art is that. And I'm with you on the sense of like, I don't necessarily think that we take it too far per se. I think that I definitely agree that we have super high expectations and that those expectations are, in my opinion, placed at the wrong feet. The burden that is placed on the feet of an entertainer, for example, is extremely high. In the same way that we had a conversation in our episode about, we're talking about like Pink and like Stupid Girls video.
Oh, yeah. The episode on internalized misogyny,
yeah.
Which was called, so that people can find it. What was it called?
Insert title here.
Your Ideal Woman. It was called Your Ideal Woman.
God, okay. Thank you. But specific to sort of that notion of like your ideal woman, I think a lot of the times we see particularly young women in music industry being propped up to be like examples or role models. And it's like, okay, but nobody's asking for Cardi B, for example, to be a role model. Like maybe she just wants to rap about good pussy and getting niggas money and having a good time and showing her ass. Like maybe that's okay. And this reminds me of two things. The show Blackish, And I have a lot of issues with, like, Kenya Barris in general, because sometimes...
Do you watch Blackish?
I have watched... Oh, sorry, not Blackit. Not Black... Blackish? Blackish. Is that the one with light skin?
Tracy Ellis Ross?
No, no, no. It is... That's not it,
man. Mixed-ish?
No, it's not Blackish or Mixed-ish.
Black AF?
Black AF. Thank you. Black AF. It's just another
a lot of shows.
Yeah, well, it's like people had a lot of issues with Rashida Jones being cast as the lead in that, and they were like, well, she's not very black, like she's more of a white passing black woman. But I think that was like the irony of calling it Black AF. Like, I think that that was part of it. Like, you kind of have to think about like what it means for her as a super light-skinned black woman to be talking about being Black AF. Like, that's just, it is funny. That's like funny in and of itself. And people saw that to be like, oh, it was just a perpetuation of a bunch of tropes about like bougie black people. And it's like, but maybe that was like a critique in and of itself.
And it's interesting, right? Because Blackish and Black AF, they're basically different versions of the same show, and they're both based on his real life family. And so he often gets these criticisms about centering light skin and mixed black people in his shows. And he's like, well, that's my family. What do you mean? And it's like, okay. I think it highlights that he's an artist who's creating
what he knows
about himself.
Yeah.
In a very, like, I don't get the sense that he is trying for his shows to be part of the movement, even though they are politically conscious in some ways. I also feel like, I mean, he's literally self-centering, right?
Yeah. And the people had similar critiques I saw around Black is King with Beyonce specifically. And these are things that I appreciated the conversation around colorism, because I think it's always an important conversation to have when we're talking about blackness ever. We always have to talk about like who is being seen or set up as more inherently desirable, and where are other people of different shades. Are they there in the frame? Are they there at all? What are their roles? If they have screen time, et cetera, et cetera. But one like critique about Black is King was that Beyonce was centering herself, and there were like a lot of dark skinned people around her. And it was kind of like this sort of savior trope with this light skinned black woman. And I was kind of like, it's her art. Like, I don't know what you wanted. You wanted Beyonce to make a film about her, but she's a singer. So she's going to be in her fucking, she's going to be in it. And I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but like in that case, I'm like, I think what you guys wanted, or like the people who were critiquing Beyonce for that notion, which again is likely worthwhile. And as a dark skinned black person, like I actually benefit substantially from us talking about colorism. But I also think that like in the context of that video or the, you know, the film, which is like a long ass music video, right? Like, I don't know what people wanted Beyonce to do. I kind of felt like in that case, it is taking it too far. I don't really know, like, should Beyonce be the person who speaks up about colorism, and or should she be the person who says, hey, I'm going to make a fucking song called Brown Skin Girl and have like a lot of beautiful dark skinned black women and all shades, not even black women. Like, I saw South Asian women in that, in Brown Skin Girl, like representations of brown skinned women in general. And it's never going to be enough. I think that like the expectation of perfection in art is only going to make us extremely disappointed. And I think, I mean, I said this to you via text before we recorded, that I think there's a difference between having critical thought and like thinking critically for yourself and then just being hypercritical about everything else. And the notion of like critical thought coming at somebody as opposed to you are thinking critically for yourself. I think that we conflate the two. And sometimes it just means that we're not actually able to say like, well, what are some of the beautiful things about this piece? What are the things that add value? What are the things that push the conversation a bit further? And what are the things that don't? But I think so often we focus on the things that don't, and we're just going to be disappointed because, to your point, not all artists or creatives have a socially conscious mindset or worldview or even like desire to kind of move their life or their artistry into that path.
Absolutely. And I think even the ones who do, so there have been a lot of criticisms of Beyonce. Colorism was a big one. There were also people who criticized Black is King for just really showing a very, very like heterosexual cisgender vision of blackness.
Yeah, it did. It's fair.
Yeah. But I think Beyonce is a great example of this. I think Lin-Manuel Miranda is another great example of this, that like when you think of the level of mastery of the craft, the amount of time that it takes for someone to become that good at their skills, whether that's composition, acting, singing, directing, the visions. I mean, these are people who are very obsessed with their work, right? Yeah. Like, these are people who are working harder than anybody else, who are like, you know, long, long days, no days off, years, like those kinds of things to get to that level where they're producing art on a level of Black is King, yes, or Lemonade or
Hamilton.
In a very different way, Hamilton. Yeah. And so then when you think of the amount of time that it takes to like read all of the different thinkers and have the conversations and like really like develop your politics on a way where it's on the level of like an Angela Davis or something like that.
Right.
You can't have both. I'm not sure that you can. Maybe that's a cop out, but like, I don't really think it's humanly possible for somebody to master whatever craft that they have mastered to be on that level of entertainment and to also have that level of mastery of politics and activism.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think that, what I really admire are the artists who make music about shaking their ass and doing whatever the fuck they want to do. And you can see an evolution in some of the ways that they engage on social media or the things that they want to bring, like, add voice to. And it's never going to be perfect. Like, I actually really do appreciate that. I think specifically about Cardi B, who gets a lot of criticism for not being like intelligent enough to talk about politics, for example. I really admire that she won't let people put her into a box as to who she can be or what she can speak about, especially when it comes to her reach and her ability to like communicate to people who see her or consume her music in ways that they don't consume the news, for example, right? So like, I think that there's something really valuable about like wherever you're at, adding something to the conversation that's bigger than just about you and your views and your clicks and your music. Like, I think that's super beautiful. And I think that that is just as valuable as the people like No Name, for example, who is like a conscious rapper who is frequently critical about Hollywood and the state of the world, you know, and has started a book club and all these other pieces. She is doing what she can do really well. And I think that there's something important about like lanes, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like not everybody is going to be Beyonce level creativity or expert mastery of the craft. And if you are, and here you are on this earth giving us all you've got in that way, I just kind of feel like this is specifically like me to me, Nick to Nick. Who am I to tell Beyonce that she needs to do all of what she's doing and then also be perfect in her politics and make everybody happy? I just think that there's just a lot of like expectations we place on people who have pedestals and platforms. So then what does that do to us? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Well, you said a lot of things that I would want to respond to, but in terms of the need for nuance. So there was a quote from Dr. Montero's piece, and she was talking about, you know, when she criticized Hamilton, despite her love for it, she got a huge backlash on the internet because of that. And so she was saying that she felt like the knee-jerk defense of Hamilton, it was, quote, the very same forces that swept Donald Trump into office later that same year, namely our cultural resistance to nuance, our need for things to be black or white, good or bad, right or wrong. In this case, Hamilton was either liberatory and revolutionary and racially subversive, or it was evil and bad and should never have been written, much less performed, much less lauded. Most of us who make a career out of studying, writing, and teaching about culture can never view cultural products as so one-sided. Indeed, what makes art art for me is its multivocality, the ways in which it draws on and remixes an infinite number of cultural products and practices so as to mean many different things to many different people. Indeed, many things to the same single person.
I love that. I mean, I think what I'm taking from that quote is that there is this path that we are all kind of individually on about how we make meaning out of things. And I think that sometimes, we've talked about this before, how I'm trying to get into the better practice of, instead of going onto social media to like create my ideas about things, I'm like going to read something, then go back you know, in my own personal life and think about it. And maybe when I'm have more of a formed opinion or I've worked through sort of my own feelings about something, then I'll come back. And I feel like when it comes to art, me and you have similar, you know, values and politics, but what resonates for me might not resonate for you. I don't know. I'm much more interested in us having a conversation about like, oh, I didn't feel that way. Like, this is what resonated for me, than for me to be like, well, you're obviously wrong, Lala. Like, how does that, I don't really think that that adds anything more. I don't think that creates a pathway for, let's say somebody else wants to come and make something even better than this thing was, that we're both, you know, that we're taking bits and pieces that we like or dislike in there, and it's and we're not seeing eye to eye on, you know, the resonating pieces. And we also have different identities. I just really do feel strongly about the beehive, as they say about Beyonce's fans. Like, you can't have critique about anything. And I think it's important to have the space to critique things. But I do worry about whether critique is always constructive or whether critique is like this thing that we do as like a personality trait or as like a way to say like, you should have just not made anything to begin with. It's like, okay, well, how about there's something in between, like it being completely revolutionary and brilliant and it be complete garbage? Like, what else could be true?
Yeah. And I think for me, a big part of the answer to that is, what is our role? Because I think sometimes we fall into this trap of wanting artists to hand us this thing that's already completely perfect and aligns with our politics perfectly, and so that we can just enjoy it with absolutely no level of like thought or dissonance or like critique of it. And it's like, well, what's the point of that? That's not what art does best. I think what art does best is inspire us to ask questions, and it maybe provokes outrage at times, or it provokes love, or it provokes a lot of other feelings. But I think the role of the person engaging with the art is not to just passively accept it or to throw it out completely, but to
do something, think, with it.
Feel, yeah. Ask, you know, engage.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's like, yeah, that takes away the passivity that I think a lot of us get to enjoy. Because truth be told, I feel like we are in an age where anyone can be critical about anything. I don't know if it's a right, but like, it's certainly a freedom we all take to be critical of everybody's everything. But I really like that. There's an active role that we play as consumers of art, consumers of culture, to think for ourselves and to say, like, what does this mean for me? And also, like, if there's something I think that doesn't resonate, what's missing? And, like, where can I go to get that missing piece? Because I don't think that one artist can make and fulfill all of our needs. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that we can expect one person to have a completely fulsome vantage point about all things that we deeply care about. And if we find that person, hold on for dear life. Like, that's amazing. But I also think that, like, art serves specific roles and makes meaning of specific things depending on where you are and who you are, and that like there is room for everybody's art, and there's also room for bad art. There's also room for like things that are just like soapy and meh and just like mundane and that are not like wholly revolutionary.
And I think the same way that maybe we too often expect art to be perfect, I think we need to normalize that loving anything is not simple. Loving anything is very complicated.
Yeah.
And, you know, like loving another person, you can love so much about them, and there's going to be parts of them that make you so fucking angry, that are really hard to tolerate, that, you know, might be very close to a deal breaker for you, that like, you know, it's really hard to hold love and criticism, or love and
sort of an ambivalence and an Yeah, that's a really good point. I appreciate that a lot. Just loving people is difficult in and of itself. And so what would make us expect that the artists that we love, or the things that, you know, the creations that we love, would also be perfect, when really nothing is? And that's kind of what I was saying earlier about, like, if we're holding artists or creators to that standard, what does that mean for how we feel comfortable creating whatever special things that we have been gifted to bring out in the world? Like, what standards do we hold in our own brains for ourselves? What levels of perfection are stifling our ability to create something that's imperfect, that speaks just to us, even in the specificity of like Kenya Barris? Like, you know, if we're critical of somebody telling a story from their perspective, which I think is valid, especially if that perspective is told the world over, but I also wonder what kind of mirror that puts up to us, you know what I mean? Or if that creates space for folks who are not Kenya Barris with mixed race family members to say, hey, actually, I want to create my show or have representations of dark-skinned people specifically in response to that, because this is my normal. But I think that what I'm taking from this conversation is that like there's more room for more nuance than we think that there is a lot of the time. And that there's more space to have like generative ways of looking at art and consuming art that aren't wholesale, like this is completely beautiful and perfect or it's completely trash. Because I just think like living in absolutes is really unnatural. Mm-hmm. It's not, it's just like nothing feels really that absolute. Like we're talking so much about transformative justice and being able to hold on to our humanity. And so how do we do that when it comes to the things that we consume?
Yeah. And I kind of think like this is part of the danger of celebrity worship and part of why we have to undo celebrity worship. Yeah. It's like, take them off the pedestal. They're not idols. They're not
saviors.
Absolutely not. They're messed up, flawed human beings the same way we are. So take them off the pedestal in order to better love their work and them. The pedestal, it's this extreme thing and it dehumanizes. And it also paves the way for us to tear them down when they inevitably let us down because they don't belong on that pedestal.
And they don't belong to us either. That's a thing too. The possessiveness Absolutely. That we have over other people. It's like,
Yeah, no, exactly. And so let's humanize them and then let's engage with their work in a more active and loving way and like put ourselves into it and let ourselves be a more important part of that process. And like to adapt a quote from Dr. Montero, I really want to embrace the idea that the same piece of art can both trouble us deeply and sustain us and give us life.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.